Business Report.
Africa Business Report is brought to you by SAA, connecting Africa one flight at a time, now also flying to Perth, Australia. Marissa Lorenzo is an independent political risk analyst and is looking at some of the biggest Africa business stories, including Zimbabwe launching a new currency. This isn't the first time that they've tried it, and this particular one I think has been quite short-lived. Marissa, good evening.
Hi, Bruce. Yes, I would agree that this one might be just as short-lived as some of the others. And I think what's the most disappointing about it is it's just really not the solution for Zimbabwe's extensive macroeconomic issues, which we've seen play out over the last two decades.
It's the sort of sense, I suppose, the ultimate band-aid on a gaping wound. The gaping wound is a structural and inefficient and broken economy, which cannot be fixed with any form of financial engineering. It requires proper and possibly painful and extensive reforms if you are ever going to give them a chance of recovering.
I would agree with that 100%. It does require very deep and widespread economic reform, you know, that would be painful, that would, you know, have to take place over a number of years. But I think, you know, if you just look at the decisions made, that's not really the thinking that's there. China also a few days ago actually cancelled a chunk of debt that Zimbabwe owes it. From $2.1 billion. I mean, that also doesn't really scratch the surface of just how deep Zimbabwe's debt problems go. It also comes at a time when Chinese companies are rushing in to Zimbabwe for lithium. So again, I'm not really sure where the government is at in terms of just, you know, trying things out here and there, but not committing to wider reform. And not just economic, it's also political reform that needs to take place if there is to be positive, meaningful change in the country.
And that's considerably harder than the short-term PR wins of, oh, look, we've got a shiny new digital currency or a shiny
absolutely.
New banknote or whatever the case might be. That, you know, becomes a PR offensive, and it doesn't begin to address the issues that they face. I'm wondering just how much insight you've got in terms of Zimbabweans' response to the fact that the government keeps trying to do the same thing over and over again and expects a different result. There's a particularly unkind analogy there, suggesting that it's the first sign of insanity.
Yeah, actually, I mean, if you speak to most Zimbabweans, they didn't really pay much attention to this new currency being launched. You know, it's still the US dollar that remains prominent there. Don't think anyone expects that to change. So, you know, we've got that parallel currency market there. And I think just because of how many times Zimbabweans have heard the same thing over and over again, as you pointed out, this really just started and just came and went. It was really mocked a lot on social media by Zimbabweans. And yeah, I don't think anyone is really paying attention to it or rushing to get hold of this new currency or trading in the US dollars.
Why would you? Unfortunately, exactly. There is form in the space. We spoke to the Namibian government's chief advisor, a guy who used to work at Alan Gray, and has then been seconded to the president's office in Namibia, about these astonishing oil finds and the huge economic upside potential of these discoveries. Where are they in the process of... they made the discoveries, but in terms of exploitation and delivery and the potential sale of some of these reserves?
Sure. So we're still quite a while away from the actual exploitation and then, I suppose, the export of these oil reserves. So we're still very much firmly in the exploration phase. There's several blocks. Most of them are being explored at the moment. And, you've got big multinationals involved. You've got Total Energies. We've got Shell. They've been there for a number of years. We've also which is the company that made a huge announcement today that it's made one of the biggest finds of what seems like recoverable oil. It does have a lot of economic upside, but I would also just caution that, you know, many, many African countries have had similar economic upside when it comes to oil finds, and this hasn't really translated into more widespread wealth. So I think, you know, hopefully now there would be a bit more focus on local content, a little bit more focus on actually developing the sovereign wealth fund that they've promised to do, which they've never had before for their mining sector. But yeah, I think we're going to have to wait and see just how much companies want to invest to actually, if they do want to get all of these recoverable reserves, and then just see exactly how government is going to use that money. But we're looking at the end of the decade to actually see first export of oil.
But certainly the intention, I mean, James Nyupe, who is highly regarded within industry and I think within public sector circles, is the guy at the presidency in Namibia. There is, I think, at least for now anyway, an element of political resolve to not repeat the mistakes of so many other countries who've been gifted with wonderful natural resources and have allowed themselves to descend into deep conflict and into chaos and catastrophe as a result. This is a potential not only boost for Namibia, I suppose, but a regional boost and a potential, you know, upside benefit for South Africa, not only from a sourcing of oil point of view, but also from an industrial supply point of view.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it really depends. Namibia has a fairly good reputation as far as African countries go, but I think that we need to not lose sight or not forget that Namibia, you know, its economy relies a lot on mining, and it has not managed to translate that mining wealth into anything substantial. Namibia is one of the most unequal societies in the world, not as bad as South Africa, but very, very close.
Sure.
I think that there is definitely a lot more talk about not repeating the mistakes of the past, and hopefully that does translate into something. Unfortunately, where there is massive oil, there's big money, and where there's big money, there's also corruption. And Namibia is politically stable, but it's not exempt from the problems that plague the rest of the continent. So I think Namibia needs to be scrutinized quite carefully.
The rest of the world, of course, very few places are untouched by temptation and corruption. Mozambique, of course, we were referring to Mozambique a little earlier in our signals feature, just talking about the instability around the gas and the gas fields of Namibia and the incursions of terror groups in that sort of region. Talk to me about the politics of Mozambique and presidential succession and where we stand in terms of the evolution of the Mozambican democracy, which is, I think, a couple of weeks older than ours.
I wouldn't even go so far as to call Mozambique a democracy yet, unfortunately, although it does have a very robust civil society. But politics is very, very complicated. So Frelimo's been ruling Mozambique since 1975, and then this year they'll have general elections. So they'll get a parliamentary vote and also a presidential vote. The constitution limits the president from serving more than 2 terms. I mean, this can be changed, but for now that's how it remains. So the elections are taking place on the 9th of October, and Frelimo, which is expected to win the election, it's not expected to be unseated by any of the opposition parties, has not announced its presidential candidate, which is coming very, very late because we're now less than 6 months away from the general election. Frelimo typically does take its time in announcing its presidential candidate. It's all very, very secretive. But this time it has been taking a little bit longer than usual. We've got a date now that just came out today saying that they will have the Central Committee, which are the main decision makers in the party, they will have this discussion on the 3rd of May. So by then, we should know who the next president is likely to be. Not much would really change, you know, if Frelimo was still in charge. It would have your basic policy continuity and, you know, all of the approach towards the gas sector there, the mining sector there, that would stay the same. But business doesn't like uncertainty. And like I said, it is unusual that we don't have this at this moment. So I think everyone would just like to know what's going on and where they stand. And this meeting early May will bring a lot of clarity.
What sort of insight have you got on potential candidates? Is it one that is not really able to expound upon at this stage? Or is there some sort of indication as to who front runners might be?
So, no, unfortunately not. As is typical, Frelimo is very, very secretive about this. There are some names being thrown about. One is, you know, some that are very close to the current president. What's typically happened with a succession has been that the president will really try to get his favorite candidate in so that he can still kind of pull the strings behind the scenes, even when he's out of power. So there's, you know, there's maybe about 8 names that are floating around for contention, and I wouldn't put my name to any one of them. It's very, very difficult to tell. And it's even more difficult considering all of the delays suggesting that there is a lot of discord between the elders, between the Central Committee, and just Frelimo's own internal voting processes, that picking a successor has actually become quite a touchy issue within the party. So, at this point, very, very difficult to tell, but likely it will be someone that is close to the current president, and he will still play a very big role in the coming years.
Marissa Lorenzo, thank you very much indeed. The independent political risk analyst, great contribution to tonight's Africa Business Report.